Hello, everyone, and welcome to From Tip to Tail, a podcast dedicated to animal welfare. This podcast is sponsored by Cuddly. Cuddly is the only crowdfunding platform built specifically for animal welfare organizations worldwide. I'm Bridget.
And I'm Sydney. We've spent years working with animal rescues and have seen such amazing innovation, strength, and heart.
Having this personal connection with rescuers has made us more informed, grateful, and inspired. We hope by giving you an inside look, you will be too.
Today, we're going to be sitting down with Nicolina Santilli, co-founder of Tiny and Tall Rescue, which is a nonprofit dedicated to providing shelter, care, and behavioral support for small and giant breed dogs. Having started in 2017, this woman-run organization has accomplished some tiny and tall things for animals. That's why we were so excited to bring Nicolina on to talk about the inspiration behind the rescue, the importance of education, and how having a kind, non-judgmental approach to rescue has helped them grow. If you like this episode, be sure to click that subscribe button to listen in on similar stories. Other than that, let's get started.
Hi, Nicolina. How are you?
Hi, good. How are you guys?
Really wonderful. Yeah. So great. I'm so excited to get into what you do because I feel like learning a little bit about your mission, I am just like so curious about what and why you do what you do. But let's start at the very beginning though. So how did the rescue first get started?
So me and the other co-founder, Missy, we actually met at another rescue and we tried to help them change things and stuff like that. And they just weren't very progressive with things. So we were like, you know what? I think that we can do things differently and, you know, make a different kind of change in the world. So we opened Tiny and Tall.
So nice. I feel like that's how so many rescues get started. It's like something happens at one rescue and they're like, you know what? I feel like I'm willing to take a crack at this.
Yeah.
It's so nice though that you kind of had like a partner in crime in it because I think it can be really isolating sometimes to try and do something like this alone. So were you and Missy like friends before or?
Actually, we met at the rescue and at the previous rescue and we just clicked right off the bat. So, and we work really well together and it is a lot easier having a second person because it is a lot of work. So it's really nice that we have each other to lean on for things and we each have our own, you know, strengths and weaknesses. So we really complement each other.
I do want to ask, why Tiny and Tall? Because I feel like it's such a unique mission to have rescuing with very small breeds and very large breeds, sort of like the two ends of the stick. So what made you want to go into that?
I have a Great Dane and Missy has three Great Danes. One of them's a mix though, but so we're huge, big dog lovers. But then growing up, both of us had tiny dogs. So we were like, you know, that would be really cool if we could do like both ends of the spectrum. So that's how we came up with it.
I love that. I think it's so cool too. I would imagine, and I was thinking about this too, with very small dogs, with very large dogs, I know socialization and training is a huge part. I used to work at a hospital a few years ago, and it's so funny because the large dogs that would come in, people were so scared of them, but they were the sweetest dogs. And I have experienced that with Great Danes. So I kind of want to get into that a little bit as far as the training or the socialization part that goes into caring for a little tiny dog and how it's similar to caring for a very large dog.
Yeah, it is pretty similar. The bigger dogs, they're the biggest babies ever. My dog, he thinks he's a baby and can sit on my lap. And that's usually how Great Danes are.
Yes.
But yeah, it's kind of the same thing. Yeah, they're scared of them, but big dogs they're such great dogs. I think they're just like misunderstood, just like pit bulls, you know, they're misunderstood. We just try to tell our fosters, you know, like take a chance on them and they do. And they end up being the best dogs. They're so happy that they did if they didn't have experience with big dogs.
Absolutely. So I know you're based out of Illinois. Is that typically where you do a lot of your rescuing or do you do it in other states and other counties or sort of how does that work?
Yeah, so we work with some local animal controls and then we have a rescue partner in Oklahoma that we work with a lot. They have a really bad overpopulation of dogs down there and they don't do spay or neuter, microchip or anything like that. their pounds down there, they euthanize after 3 to 5 days if the dog is unclaimed.
Oh.
Yeah. So we work with a rescue partner down there and they have a facility. So they go to the pounds and they pull tinies and talls. And then we do a transport with them once a month. We meet them halfway in St. Louis, Missouri. And then like yesterday, I went on a transport and I went to Indiana and Michigan. So, I mean, wherever it's really needed. So we're kind of, you know, all over the place and we have our own transport van. So we can usually get a lot of dogs at once. Like this weekend, we're getting over 30 dogs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yesterday we got 13. So we always take in like large groups of dogs at a time and then take owner surrenders too for people that just can't care for them or, you know, are going through hard times or something like that. Really, they come from all over the place.
Oh no, I bet. Well, and with that many dogs too, are you primarily foster based and you sort of coordinate the homes as they come? Or do you guys have like a shelter sort of situation when you bring that many dogs in?
So we are all foster based. We have probably, I think it's around 150 foster homes.
Oh, wow.
They're not all active at the same time, but yeah. So we have a lot of foster homes. We actually do the transports at my house. So we are trying to get a facility. It's hard and it's a lot of money. So we're working towards that to hopefully move into a place so it will be a little bit easier. We don't have to do it all at my house.
Definitely. Well, so that many foster homes, I mean, how are you organized and how are you able to keep track of everyone? Because I mean, talk about herding cats. I feel like herding fosters sounds like a whole other journey.
Yeah, it's a lot. We have a foster mentor program. So fosters that have been with us for a long time or have fostered for even years before us, and they're pretty knowledgeable in questions that, you know, newer fosters would ask and stuff like that. So actually we use Facebook a lot. We use Facebook Messenger and every single foster has their own chat. And me and Missy are in all of the chats. And then we have a medical coordinator. So any medical problems and vetting gets scheduled through her. We have a foster coordinator who kind of manages the mentors. So she's in there and then they get a mentor as well. So if there's any question that maybe the mentor doesn't know, you know, there's backup people in there. Somebody's always there to answer our fosters because we get a lot of people that come to us and they say, you know, we were just kind of given a dog and no direction with the dog. So that was one of the big things that we wanted to make sure that, you know, we did and we gave people direction. We want them to feel appreciated and acknowledged, you know, for questions or concerns that they have. So we have the mentors that they're assigned fosters and they're their mentor through every single foster dog that they have. So then they build the relationship and it's easy to go to them with any questions.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, that's such a special thing too, because I think with so many people trying out fostering for the first time, I think if you have a bad experience right off the get-go, it kind of puts you off forever sometimes. And so that's really heartbreaking to imagine that someone had a terrible experience or like, I know rescue is a wild world. So if you didn't have that mentor, you might feel like a little bit of whiplash of a foster just stepping into it.
Yes.
But I think that's really so wonderful that there's like that level of like ownership and connection. I imagine they probably get to be pretty close.
Yeah. A lot of us are friends outside of the rescue too, you know, and the fosters end up being friends with their mentor and stuff just because they work so closely together. So yeah, it's really good. We're like a big family, all of us. We always say the tiny and tall family because we do like to work close together. And fosters are opening their homes. They're doing so much for these dogs. So we always want them to feel like acknowledged and appreciated. So we try really hard to keep it like that.
Well, and like what a special way to try out having like a Great Dane in your home for the first time. Cause I feel like that's very different from like a typical Labrador or something like that. Like, or at least mentally, it has to feel like, okay, there is going to be a big thing in my space.
Yeah.
And being able to see what that life is like, I think we're all used to like the zoomies and like crazy dogs running around. And so the personalities of Great Danes is actually probably, I don't want to stereotype, but from the Great Danes I've met, it's like probably would be like a very welcome vibe for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's nice. That's what we always tell them. And they meet our dogs too. And they're like, oh my God, we love them. So, and we're like, they're all like that. They're usually pretty willing to open their homes to a Great Dane, and then they're hooked. Then they want every Great Dane that comes into the rescue, you know?
Definitely. I know, it's such a like sensitive breed, which is like has its downsides, of course, also has such amazing benefits. Do you see just a lot of Great Danes coming in through animal control, or is it more through transport and other circumstances?
I would say a lot of owner surrenders. I think that when people get them, you know, they're adorable as puppies, but they are big. They're huge. Mm-hmm. Like my dog is 160 pounds. The expenses, they're a lot. They eat a lot. You take them to the vet, it costs more money, you know, just everything. And if they don't get the proper training as puppies, because they're wild as puppies. Like my dog, he chewed through one of my walls.
Wow.
Within minutes. At 8 months old, he was 80 pounds. So a lot of destructiveness and stuff like that. So people surrender them because the dog didn't have the proper training, and it's a 130 or 160 pound dog, yeah. You know, that has absolutely no training or no manners or anything like that. So I would say majority is owner surrenders due to, you know, stuff like that. Probably like 75% is due to training issues or medical that they can't afford because they are so big, you know, and everything is just costs way more money with them.
Well, yeah. And I know we've heard horror stories.
Yes.
Of like them swallowing things like whole because they can.
I was going to say, we've even heard like very like destructive stories from people who have tiny dogs. So like if a tiny dog can do that amount of damage, you can only imagine what a horse of a dog would do.
Yeah. My dog, he ate through my wall within like 10 minutes. Like it was so quick. I'm like, oh, how did you do that fast? But they'll tear up couches. You know, I mean, they're with no training, you know, they're such a big dog that they can really mess things up quickly.
How is it to like retrain them then? Because there's that old adage, you can't teach a dog new tricks. Mm-hmm. So when a foster takes in a Great Dane that maybe hasn't had training, does it take months and months? Or is it something that they catch on to pretty quickly?
Great Danes they're very, very smart dogs, and they really want to please their people. So it's typically pretty easy to even just basic training with them, to give them basic training. It's just consistency, but they like live to please their people. And majority of them are really, really food motivated. So that helps. So it's not too bad, probably not as bad as you would think to, you know, teach an old dog new tricks. But we have had ones that, you know, were more challenging than others, but just with time.
Right. We always like to touch on, I mean, I'm not sure how long has it even been that we've been trapped in COVID?
I'm going to say like two years now?
2 years-ish. How has that been for the rescue and you and Missy? Has a lot changed?
We have gotten a lot busier. When COVID hit, the shelter that we work with in Oklahoma that we pull dogs from, they work with other rescues around the country, and they had all shut down. Mm-hmm. So, and stopped accepting dogs. We were the only rescue that was still accepting them. So actually we did take in some medium dogs and stuff like that because they didn't have their other rescues, because the other rescues are shelter-based. So they went to the bare minimum, you know, kept the dogs that they didn't have places to go, but they weren't taking incoming dogs. So in the beginning, it was chaotic. We opened 4.5 years ago, and the first year of COVID, our number of dogs that we rescued almost tripled from the year before.
Wow.
The year before, I think we had rescued like 174 dogs. And the first year of COVID, we were almost 600 dogs.
Wow.
So we really like got really, really busy, but people were off of work. So luckily we had a lot of people sign up for foster, you know, to foster because they were working from home. So we were able to help all of those dogs, which was good. And now we know, you know, what we're capable of. So we've only taken in more dogs from there. Like this year, I think we've already taken in over 100 dogs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, and a lot of people from COVID, they stuck around after they went back to work and everything. It was nice because it wasn't just like during COVID that they wanted to foster. They've stuck around and they've helped in other areas of the rescue too, if they can't foster anymore. So we've gained like a lot of really, really great people volunteer wise that if they can't foster, they can help us with this or social media or, you know, a lot of other departments, but they're still around helping.
And I know this was, we've heard from a few different shelters and rescues about that second wave that everyone was very nervous of. You know, people were fostering and opening their homes to animals during the pandemic, but people were getting nervous of what was going to happen once people started going back to work. Is that something that you saw in your experience, people returning dogs or things like that happening?
So we were really worried about that too. But during COVID, we prepped like all of our foster homes they interview the applicants and then they ultimately choose the adopter because they know best.
So
we had a call with them and we said, hey, look, you guys really need to talk to them about what they're going to do when they go back to work because they are going to go back to work. We had them go over things and made sure that the foster felt comfortable with the adopter's plan and stuff to try to avoid returns after everybody went back to work. And teaching them, like the adopters, create some space between you and the dog. So when you go back to work, the dog doesn't have severe separation anxiety. And then they're tearing up your house or crying all day or, you know, stuff like that. So we really prepped our foster homes to talk to people. And I would say, I think we only had maybe 5 COVID returns.
Wow.
Number was very low. We really tried to instill that in people because we didn't. That was our thought. We're like, okay, we're bringing all these dogs in and they're getting adopted, no problem. But everybody's life is going to go back to normal.
Oh, absolutely.
So we really, really talked to everybody about it. And I think it obviously worked and helped, but you get returns just because sometimes or lifestyle changes, but we really didn't see too bad of a return rate after everything.
I mean, you should be so proud of that number. Mm-hmm. That's incredible. And I love what you're really touching on too, because we've spoken with other organizations who work in, like, for instance, like natural disasters and things like that, which in my point of view, I think COVID is in a lot of ways been a disaster in itself.
Yes.
But I know in rescue too, like there is this rush to help in a lot of these disaster situations, right? And then you're still living in this disaster zone, but the support kind of wanes off. So really how you bring in that support and how you communicate with those people during that time means so much. And it just sounds like you were so effective during that time that people stuck around, that your fosters appreciated their mentors and felt like seen. So that's something I feel like that's super unique in itself, that you were able to like harness these people. And instead of them just like disappearing into the ethos, they're still with you.
Yeah. And we're like so grateful because we're nothing without our fosters and volunteers. The reason that the wheels go around every day. We're really, really thankful. And we're very lucky because we have the best volunteers and fosters. And we always tell them that because they are the best.
Well, I'm sure they feel the same about you. I mean, because you're treating them with love and respect. That's so amazing. Let's talk a little bit more about how the organization is made up. Like, what is your emphasis? What is Missy's emphasis? How do you work on like give and take being a co-founder in an organization?
So we both have our strengths. I personally hate sitting at a computer all day long. I did that before this and I hate it. So I like to like be out on the road and do stuff like that. Missy, she loves doing computer stuff. She's very like detail oriented. So she always makes sure that our Facebook posts have that little extra pizzazz on it and stuff like that. Like she is really, really great at that. When we do fundraisers, she always puts a little extra into it. And she's really good with the fosters and coordinating everything with them and meeting up with them if they need things. My strength is fundraising. So have a meeting every week. We go over everything that we're going to work on and she does her thing. I do my thing. And then, you know, and then we regroup and see whatever we need to do together. We do a lot of the transports together. You know, that's kind of like our alone time to just kind of hang out, but it's also doing something that we love together. So yeah, we have our strengths and weaknesses, and we just really bounce off each other with them.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like more than strengths and weaknesses, like sounds like you have your passions, because there really is something special to be said about someone who adds that little extra oomph to something. We've even seen that with fosters, right? Like, I feel like some fosters will like take a little like decor to their like medical wraps or something. It's amazing. Like, so you're like, you didn't need to do that, but you did. And my, what a difference it made. It's really incredible. That's so lucky that you have that pizzazz maker in your corner.
Yeah.
It sounds like you guys are so organized and you have such a nice team, such a huge network of fosters. Is this your full-time emphasis, or are you working on the side as well? Or
I do have a side job. I'm a bartender, but this is like our full-time jobs.
Oh yeah. I can imagine. Well, especially with that many transports happening, I was like, I don't know how you would balance that.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Definitely. Well, so speaking of transport, are you working with a lot of other organizations when you're moving around? Because I know you mentioned a few different states, and I wonder if you have like an adoption network that reaches all the way that far, or if you are working with other organizations in like Michigan, for instance.
No. So our main one is just in Oklahoma that we work with, but we do like adoptions and stuff like that out of state. We have some dogs like in Colorado, Massachusetts. A dog 2 weeks ago went down to Georgia. But yeah, with the organizations, it's mostly just the Oklahoma one. The ones yesterday, they were all owner surrenders, breeder release, owner surrenders. So they were just directly from them.
That's such a special and unique thing. I know so many rescue organizations, like they refuse owner surrender because they are like shelter specific. And I think it's nice to be aware that there are other organizations that are helping those animals, because we don't want them ending up like somewhere they shouldn't be. And I know in a lot of cases, like owner surrender is a really heartbreaking thing that people don't want to do, but are being forced to do. So tell us, in your experience, what has owner surrender been like for you? I know it brings up a lot of feelings depending on each situation.
Yeah, I would say, you know, most of them, I really feel for the people, because things happen and nobody knows what's going to happen in the future. We just got a dog yesterday, a Great Dane actually. They're going through a really nasty divorce and neither of them can keep the dog. But the husband loves that dog, but it's just, he can't right now, you know? So I really feel for them. And I hate when like places won't take owner surrenders or anything like that, because the dog is going to end up somewhere. It shouldn't, you know, really be an outlet for them. And like, we never badmouth them on social media or anything like that, because we don't want people to feel like they can't come to a rescue when they need help. You know, we're there to help people. So sometimes, I'm not going to lie, there are ones that I want to say not nice things to the people, you know, but that's with anything. There's always bad people in anything that just, they're giving them up for a dumb reason or something. But again, you know, we're not here to judge them. We're here to help them and help the dog. And at the end of the day, the dog is the most important being in this whole equation. So it is what it is when it's a bad situation that they're coming from, or they were treated poorly or whatever, but we're not going to judge them, because we always want to make sure that people know that there is an outlet if something happens, or if they do need to get rid of their dog. We're trying to put together some kind of program to help owners stay with their dogs. I'm trying to work on that, but it's taking some time, because sometimes there's people that I can't afford basic medical on their dogs, and that's why they get rid of them, or food. Or so we're trying to form a program to where we can help people with that as well, because they love their dog, but just because they might not be able to afford it doesn't mean that they're a bad owner. I always say, like, there's people that have a lot of money and they don't care for their dogs well, and there's people that have very little money. They love their dog and they care for them the best that they can. So
we're trying to help people that are in those positions, but they love their dog and they want to keep them. It's better than them coming into rescue, going into a foster home, getting adopted. You know, that's a lot of extra steps for the dog.
Mm-hmm.
And what is it doing to the dog's mental state? Some of them, they just bounce back like, oh, nothing changed. I'm fine where I'm at. They don't care. But some of them really have a hard time with the change in foster home. And then once we get them comfortable, then they're being adopted in another change. We're trying to help do something to keep the owners and their dogs together. Obviously, it's not going to work for every owner surrender situation. We just had another dog, a military family. They love their dog, but they can't have the dog on the base. They won't allow it. So it's sad. There's nothing we can do, you know?
No, totally. And I really appreciate too what you're saying about having like a, almost like a non-judgmental approach to it. Because I mean, every day I see these, you know, photos of animals that are just wandering along a road or they were dumped on the street. And in the back of my head, it's just always a thought I have, like how many of you had owners that just felt they didn't have anywhere to go, or they felt like they were going to be judged if they went somewhere. And as a result, just dumped you on the street. People who just felt like they didn't have somewhere to turn to. So I that's always a thought in my head. So I really, really appreciate that, because I think it's such a huge issue.
Yeah, I agree. Like I said, we came from another rescue and we saw all these things and we're like, we would never do that. Because how would we feel if we were in that situation? We always try to other people's perspectives and the dog's perspective, because again, you know, at the end of the day, the dog is what's most important in the situation. That's our mission. That's what we're doing. And we see a lot of it too on Facebook or social media, anywhere, you know, oh, this owner, they did this. But that's just setting a tone for the rest out there. I don't want to give my dog to a rescue because they're going to badmouth me. And what if somebody I know sees the dog on their social media? You know, it's not fair to do that, I don't think.
No. And of course there are, like you said, there are the exceptions. There are those cases in which people were acting irresponsibly and there definitely are those situations. But I do think there's a large amount of animals who are on the street just because their owner maybe was a little too proud to admit that they couldn't take care of the dog and they didn't want to go to somebody.
Yeah, because they don't trust it, you know, and a lot of it is trust. There are some owner surrenders that I still give them updates, you know, as long as they say that's okay, or they just want to know when they found a home. So we keep in touch with people like that. Like the guy from yesterday, the Great Dane that we got, you know, he's like, can I please have updates after he gets adopted? It's okay if I can't, but he just wants to make sure. He loves his dog, but he just can't keep it. So we always try to build that kind of trust with people too, because like him, he loves his dog. He wants to trust where the dog is going. So we keep some of the relationships that we can. And I think it helps too, because if they know somebody that can't keep their dog anymore, they'll say, hey, look, I had a really good experience with Tiny and Tall. I know that they take care of their dogs. I know they kept me updated. Then that helps that next person too. And word of mouth is everything. So if we keep doing that with people and then they keep saying, you know, if they hear a coworker or my coworker's cousin's sister needs to get rid of their dog, they can say, oh, well, I went to Tiny and Tall and I know that my dog was okay.
Oh, that gives me chills as you say that too. Cause I think a lot of people think that, or a lot of people probably do experience that with other rescues or shelters where they just surrender their dog and then they never hear about their dog anymore. You know, there's like that cutoff. So, oh, that gives me chills just that he checked in and you guys update him and he gets to know that his dog is in a better place because of that decision he made with you guys.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, and speaking to what you were saying about like just keeping animals in homes, like, I think we've all seen with COVID how someone can just have like a couple hard months. And sometimes it's just that long and they just need support for that little amount of time. And then they're back and bouncing back. It's heartbreaking to think that a couple hard months can cause irreparable damage to like a family unit and to owning a pet. So I love that you're making strides and working towards supporting those people.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, so we've talked about a lot of things, but we haven't talked about animals. So can you tell us, a couple stories about some animals that have come into your rescue that have found happier lives because of rescue?
Yeah. So the one that always comes to my mind first is a dog, Marley, that we got. We opened in November 2017, and we picked him up December 26th, the day after Christmas, 2017. And he had been living in a garage in Chicago, and we had a polar vortex that year. It was like negative 50 out.
Oh, yeah.
He was tied up to a chain. He was eating anything that was around him. So he got brought to a local shelter, and they called us and they're like, he needs help. You know, the people surrendered him. So there wasn't like a stray hold or anything like that on him. So we went in, me and Missy went at like 9-10 o'clock at night, picked him up, brought him to his foster home, and he jumped out of the car and he collapsed. He was just like a bag of bones. It was very, very sad. It was heartbreaking. He actually pooped out plastic bags for like a week. Aww. But he was the sweetest dog ever. So after he, you know, we got weight on him and we did his blood work and all of that, got him neutered and everything. He was like our first real special dog, you know, like our first medical dog. So we were like, we have to find him the perfect family. Like, you know, he had a terrible life before. We have to make sure we find the absolute perfect adopter for him. So we did. And he's doing so great with her. It's a girl. She has a German Shepherd, and then she has him. And then actually she just adopted her third dog from us, which was a Great Dane. And he was a Mastiff. Marley was a Mastiff. So a big dog, just a bag of bones. That's one of our favorite stories and our go-to stories, because just the before pictures of him are just looking at them makes you want to cry because he was in such terrible, terrible shape. And then, yeah, now she adopted her third dog from us, so, which was a breeder release dog. So a very scared dog. She didn't have any confidence or anything like that, but we knew that her being adopted, you know, by this Samantha, that she would teach her everything and she would help her get through it and take the time and patience with her that she needs. So that's our go-to story, because it's just, I cry just thinking about how he was and seeing him adopted. And I cried like a baby the day he got adopted. I was there and I was so happy.
That's so magical, I think. And I'm just picturing like this whole crew of like, I know German Shepherds are kind of medium sized, but they're kind of big too. But it's like this like big dog crew sounds so like cute. Just best friends.
Yeah, her German Shepherd he's like 90 pounds. So ooh, he's big a pretty guy. Big. We had another dog. Her name was Cuddles. She was actually, it's a really sad story. Her owner had had her since she was a puppy. And she was, I think she was about 10 when we got her. And the owner she became homeless and she was living in her car and she couldn't afford the rabies vaccine. So the police took the dog and put her in a shelter. And sadly, the girl she didn't have money to get her out and get the vaccine. So she was at the shelter for like 2 months. They waited to see if she would make it back, but she didn't. So then they called us. So we took her and then we found out that she had terminal cancer. So we found the perfect home for her. This girl, she just adored her and she just gave her the best life. Her cancer was just so bad and untreated for so long. It had kind of spread everywhere. So she actually passed away, I think like 6 or 8 months ago, but it was sad because she had been with her mom her entire life, you know, and then her mom fell into hard times, but she loved her dog. Mm-hmm. She had food every day and stuff, but it's just by law, you have to have rabies and mm-hmm. she couldn't afford it. So it was good to see her go to a home that just adored her and took her all these places and did all these things just to make her end of life the best possible.
It's so heartbreaking, but I love that. Like there's some level of like celebration to giving her like a sweet and honorable, like final time in life. It's something that's normally tinged with a lot of sadness for people reading stories like that.
Yeah.
But I think it's really important because these animals deserve it. Definitely. Well, so tell us, how many animals do you have in your home?
I actually only have one.
What?
Yeah. My dog, he likes being an only child. He is so spoiled. He's so, so spoiled. His name is Luigi. He is an 8-year-old Great Dane, but he also has some medical problems. He's fed raw. I have insurance on him. He gets the best of the best. He has 3 big Barker beds throughout my house. So his medical problems are just, they're a lot of money. I couldn't afford to have another dog right now, especially like the way that I treat him. So I only have him. Missy has 3 huge dogs.
That's some self-control though. I feel like you're a warrior in and of yourself because of that. If I saw all these dogs coming through, I wouldn't, you're responsible about it. You're thinking about, I'm giving this one quality care and he needs all my time. I would probably just be stalking my house with all of them.
Sydney has 4 right now. So
yes.
And who knows? She has a spare room. So any day now she might end up, she'll become a hoarder and we'll have to confiscate them. No, of course, Sydney's responsible too. Well, so we have some kind of fun questions.
Yeah.
So if Luigi could talk, what would be the one thing he said to you?
He would probably tell me to stop being so overbearing.
Oh my gosh. He's like a laid back kind of guy.
Oh, he is so chill. He was so crazy as a puppy, but he's definitely calmed down now. I always call him a distinguished gentleman because he's definitely calmed down. He still is, for an 8-year-old Great Dane, he has a lot of spunk. And I take him swimming and he loves it and he could still do it at 8. But I think he would like me to back off a little.
So you've had him for a long time then. If you had him when he was a pup, well, I mean, long time, 8 years, I guess it's a drop in the bucket. But what is the naughtiest thing he's ever done?
There's a lot. He still does naughty things. I would say the worst though was probably when he ate my wall.
Was it just a big hole? Like, I don't know how you even, how would they start on the wall?
Yeah.
It was like a pillar.
Oh, okay.
He just ate it from the bottom as far as he could reach up. It was down to the studs. He loves shredding things. So like his stuffies, he loves just pulling the stuffing out of them. So it was bad. I was like, oh my God.
You're like, just stay away from the low bearing.
Yeah.
Man, was that just like an afternoon or what did it, was he like little by little, like one of those prisoners with a spoon kind of thing?
Oh. It was in one afternoon. He would only go on the crate usually for like when I was crate training him like half the day because I used to work 2 miles from my house. So I would go home on lunch. So I would test him half days being out and he had been doing really, really good. So I was like, okay, let's try a full day. You know, so he had been out for a full day while I was at work out of his crate for a couple weeks. So I'm like, okay, he's good now. You know, he won't chew anything up. And then one day I came home from work and I was like, okay, I think we'll go back to crate training for a little bit because I think he got a little bored.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. Oh, rough. Well, so our final question is something a little bit maybe more difficult, but we always ask, is there one quote or life motto that kind of keeps you inspired while you're doing rescue work?
We always just really try to remember, you know, there's a lot of hard days in rescues. There's a lot of days that we're like, we want to give up, but we always just try to remember all of the happy things that come out of it. And the adoptions. That's what really helps keep us going is seeing the adoptions. And we keep in touch with every single adopter. So just watching the dogs progress in their homes and stuff like that, that's kind of what pushes us through the days and the hard days. And so I don't know if that's like a motto, but is that we want to give up. We go look at old pictures or updated pictures that people have sent us of their adopted dogs. And then it's like, this is why we do this.
Definitely. I imagine that's why you're retaining so many of your fosters and and everyone that keeps coming back to you because you do that, and you're keeping your focus on everything, not getting bogged down by just the hard stuff.
We try. It's hard. There's multiple days in a row where we just want to give up, but we can't because there's so many dogs out there that need us. And so, you know, all the other rescues too, they need us. They don't have anybody else.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much for chatting with us. I feel like it's such a unique and inspiring mission that you and Missy have. And I love that you're growing this network that now is like spreading like the joy of rescue and all around. It's so wonderful.
Thank you so much.
It was so great talking to Nicolina about how she and Missy run their organization. It's incredible to hear about how they were able to use COVID to grow their network and save more animals because of it. If you want to learn a little bit more about Tiny and Tall Animal Rescue, you can check our show notes and our blog.
And as always, remember to rate, like, and subscribe to this podcast. And be sure to follow Cuddly on all social media accounts at We Love Cuddly. That's CUDDLY. Thanks, guys.